Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning and welcome in. Grant and Danny on a Wednesday. December is 18 days old, 2019. In the rearview mirror, our very special 10-year anniversary of Bruce Allen. The Bruce Allen special show is archived for you. You can use the 24hourradio.com rewind or go to thefandc.com and click on audio and Grant and Danny to podcast any part of yesterday's show. We had a lot of fun. We got a lot of great feedback.
Good time, yeah.
And I think it was, I felt a little bit bad about the show. I think it was the show that our listeners wanted, needed, and demanded.
I didn't feel bad at all. It's not my fault. I didn't do it. All we're doing is pointing out how ridiculous it is that it's still a thing. That we're now 10 years and one day into Bruce Allen's reign of buffoonery. 100 losses. Not all of them are his fault. Again, he took over in the last three games of the season. Had nothing to do with. His first game was the swinging gate. Welcome to Washington, or welcome back to Washington, sir. But he should not have a job. He should not be in charge of this football organization. He is. We pointed out how ridiculous that is for 4 hours.
We had a lot of fun doing it.
It's a good time.
The Redskins have two Pro Bowlers. One is a punter in Tress Way, who had maybe the best season of any punter in the NFL this year.
He kicks bombs.
I'm so happy for Tress, by the way. This is his sixth season already, believe it or not, in Washington. He's never missed a game. He'll punt the final 2 weeks of this year, and he'll have 16s across the board in games played dating back to 2014. But he has already punted 70 times. I mean, there were years, like you go back to 2016, in 16 games, he punted 49 times. Think about that. He's already punted 70 times. He'll be close to 80 punts this year for the third straight season. He's averaged 49 yards a punt, 26 dropped inside the 20. He's been wonderful. We had him on the air a couple weeks ago. He did a great interview with us about wanting to be in the Pro Bowl. He got his wish. He is headed to Orlando. Same buzz is headed to Hawaii.
But I guess guys like it better. Remember, was it Lorenzo Alexander who told us that guys like it better because it's easier to get there?
You know who I think likes it better, and I'm just guessing, is guys who have done the Hawaii trip a bunch.
Mm.
I bet you if you're Tress Way and you're young and he's in his 20s, he's not a kid by any means, he's almost 30, but you're married, you got a couple young kids, and you can either have a little vacation away from the kids, or maybe even bring them with you, and you get a paid vacation to Hawaii that you haven't done yet. I bet you'd like that. Now, if you've made 5 or 6 Pro Bowl trips, the older you get, maybe the more of an inconvenience.
That 7-8 hour flight all of a sudden becomes a little bit more cumbersome. Yeah.
Although, I guess with his kids, you could take his wife's name's Bree and the kids to Orlando, and you could do Disney as well.
I think that's a thing.
And that's what the players do. They go do all the different parks and take all their kids and family members with them. I remember Alex Smith was still with the Chiefs. The 1 year I was in Orlando during the Pro Bowl week, I was at some outdoor mall, like walking around, and I was wondering all day. I'm like, I wonder if I'm going to see any NFL players here. Practice is over. It's a mall like 5 miles away. Nice restaurants and stuff. The only NFL player I met that day, I was like walking all over the joint, was Alex Smith.
Is that right?
And it was his last year, I think, with the Chiefs, a year before he got traded to the Redskins. The other Skins Pro Bowler, perhaps a little bit surprisingly, is Brandon Scherff. And I say surprisingly only because Scherff has actually already missed 3 games this year. I'm not sure if he's going to play again. He got injured reserved, I guess, yesterday. I should say I wasn't sure if he was going to play again. But 11-game season for him going into the stretch run here, having already missed some time. And while he dominates when it's 72 and sunny and he's healthy, he's been called for enough penalties this year. I just wasn't sure in a terrible offense that can't move the ball with bad quarterback play and a running game that is ineffective for major stretches if he was going to get the credit that he deserved. But the fifth-year player is going back to the Pro Bowl, an annual staple for him.
So I couldn't tell you, and this is where it's really, really tough, right? With a quarterback, with a defensive tackle or defensive end, we could look at some of the counting stats. you can go maybe this guy over this guy, right? We'll do that with Ioannidis in a second, for example. I think he should have gotten it over Grady Jarrett, but we'll talk about that. I can't tell you definitively what guards played better or worse. Anecdotally, it feels like Zach Martin of the Cowboys should just live in Orlando and travel to Dallas for games because that's a Pro Bowl. That guy's a stud. I don't know if Brandon Brooks played better or worse than Brandon Scherff. I don't know if anybody else has a better case or worse case than Scherff. It's nice that he got appreciated. I do think sometimes, though, with Pro Bowl, guys, especially positions like that, just sort of they work their way onto that column. Like if there are two columns on the page, out and in, we just assume that he's in if he was available for an opening.
Specifically for interior offensive line.
I think so.
Now, tackles maybe even in the same boat, but this is the third time in 4 years for Scherff. But I don't want to take away from him.
I'm not knocking it. I have no idea is my point.
I think he's one of the best guards in football. So if you want to honor him even though he's part of a terrible offense, cool.
Mm-hmm.
If he was in New Orleans, everyone would praise him every week for being one of the most dominant players at his position. You know, with playing around better players, when the center next to you and the guard on the other side of that center and the tackle next to you are all elite-level players, I'll bet you Brandon Scherff would be even better than we know him to be right now, mm-hmm. which is just really, really good. You mentioned Matt Ioannidis' name. I was going to ask you if there were any snubs, but I guess you feel like there was one.
Ioannidis should be in there, for me. Now, he's not beating out Aaron Donald, and he shouldn't. He's not beating out Fletcher Cox, and he shouldn't. Those two guys are as good. That's one and maybe 1A or 2 in terms of best defensive players in the front seven in the NFL for my money. I'll take Aaron Donald before anybody else, and Fletcher Cox is a great consolation prize. That guy, both those guys are awesome. Just looking at some of the numbers and some of the different things, Grady Jarrett is a great player in Atlanta. Now, he doesn't have the sack totals that other guys are going to have. He's in the mid-fives, I think, maybe six. For a defense that at times has been good, at times has been bad. Whose defense does that sound like, by the way? But I like Grady Jarrett. He's a good player. To me, Ioannidis has had an awesome season. He's going to end it with double-digit sacks. And from a position where most of the time he's just occupying a center or guard and letting other guys flow to the football, as disruptive as he is, as dominant at times as he is, to me, he's a Pro Bowler. I think he'll end up there, but it's a shame to me that he got snubbed kind of the initial.
This is not how we should dictate who goes to the Pro Bowl and who isn't, but I think Grady Jarrett's a better football player than Matt Ioannidis. If I had to pick one of them moving forward, Ioannidis 4 years in at 25 or Jarrett 5 years in at 26, I would take Grady Jarrett. Do you disagree with any of those statements?
I don't.
Now, who had a better season is a very different conversation. Both have played every single game, and for Ioannidis, by the way, who's never played 16 games, that's a big deal in my opinion. But if you look at overall impact, Grady Jarrett has 65 tackles. Matt Ioannidis has 56. Now, they're paid to do slightly different things, but many of Grady Jarrett's tackles, more of them have been solo than Ioannidis's. Ioannidis has a 3-sack advantage, which is the flashy, sexy category here. But otherwise, Jarrett's forced a couple fumbles. Ioannidis hasn't. Would I like Ioannidis to be there? Of course. As a Redskins fan and someone who's watched this guy flourish from his first season where he didn't make any plays to now being one of the more impactful defensive players on the team and one of the better pass-rushing down defensive linemen in his conference, I want him to be rewarded for that. But, A, I'm not surprised Grady Jarrett got in, and B, I don't particularly think he was snubbed. I'll bet you if you had a bunch of coaches in a room who have to game plan for those guys and watch all the film, while they tell you Ioannidis is deserving on mm-hmm. a binary, he should be there, .. I'll bet you they'd also say Jarrett should as well and maybe is slightly more deserving.
Yeah, I'm not crying the miscarriage of justice here. Just simply saying that if it's up to me, I'd vote Ioannidis in over based on he's got more quarterback hits, tied with the same number of tackles for loss, more sacks, more disruptive. And now the forced fumbles, I'm with you.
I just don't know, and this is my own ignorance here. I don't know how much Grady Jarrett is paid to be a pass rusher.
And that's what's so hard.
Get up the field. Yeah. I know that they want those plays, mm-hmm. like everyone wants them. But as an example, the Redskins have Daron Payne, who's a space eater.
Yep.
They've got John Allen, who's paid to do a little bit more of the grunt work, so to speak. And in this rotation now, Ioannidis is the guy, freelance is the wrong word, but the guy that often gets to make up for that by getting up the field. I think Grady Jarrett does some of the Daron Payne, John Allen stuff, too.
This is what's so hard as well, right? It's scheme. It's what do you ask to do in each play, and how do you, justify that or rank that, right? Let's say Matt Ioannidis and Grady Jarrett just switch teams right now for this week or for this entire season. Who would have produced more in each system? I get the sense that Grady Jarrett might have had bigger numbers if he played for the Redskins, asked to do different things. So it's an intuitive point. It's not apples to apples, and it's really hard to compare. Just sitting here going, damn, I wish people noticed what Ioannidis has done this year.
He's the guy, I think, of the Redskins that is most deserving that will not be there as of right now. Mm-hmm. But he's already been re-signed, and you give this team a lot of credit. They didn't wait. They got a deal in place. They would have had to pay him more had they have waited, or they would have lost him had they have not paid him when they did. And so if we're going to club them for things that they do wrong, give them credit for that. They took care of Matt Ioannidis. He is here on a very affordable deal, and that's good news. But it brings me to the question of the morning here to get started on Grant and Danny, which is a guy that did make the Pro Bowl, who is going to be a free agent, who has not been paid yet, is being debated about at Redskins Park as to what type of offer they make. And that is, going back to Brandon Scherff at guard, what do you do with him? Do you think the Redskins should pay him elite money at that position? We'll get into the numbers and what it might cost. But would you make him one of the highest paid offensive linemen and one of the highest paid guards in football after a couple of years where he's missed games with injury, with the body of work that you have, where he is now almost annually a Pro Bowler? Because that's what it's going to take to bring him back if you want him. We know that if you just let a guy walk and you say, oh, we'll replace him, it could end up with several years of Sean LaVal and guessing on Eric Flowers, and plugging in options like Wes Martin. Would you pay Brandon Scherff elite money to keep him, or do you let him hit free agency? That's the question. Your calls are next. 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067 on Grant or Dan. I've got an is it weird that I want to get to here in just a couple of minutes, but let's answer the question we posed to our listening audience a few minutes ago first. Are you paying Brandon Scherff? That is the question at 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067 is how you can get a hold of us on Grant and Danny. Look, Brandon Brooks, who's one of the best guards in football, signed a four-year deal worth about $56 million with the Philadelphia Eagles. That is the new market. That's the top of the market when he signed his contract to get a deal in place. But you're now talking about a position, and it's exploded over the last couple of years, where at one point in time, $9 to $11 million three, 4 years ago, top of the tier guard play. Agents always wanted their tweener offensive lineman in college to go to the tackle spot because that was the only way you were going to get paid.
Right.
Now guards get paid like tackles. You know, the tackle market has only climbed a little bit into that 15-16 range, whereas the guards have caught up to them. Brandon Brooks at 14 per, Zach Martin 14, Andrew Norwell 13.3, Trey Turner 11.25. So let's just say Brandon Scherff takes $13.5 million per year.
Yeah.
Are you going to pay him that over the next 5 years?
If you'd asked me this months ago, I would have said, this is a no-brainer. Get this done. I mean, that's how I felt, right? Where they're like, hey, remember we asked him at training camp. Are you guys talking or what's going on? And then Case Keenum came over and squirted water on him, and then there was a whole fracas. But the point is, I would have said, let's get this done now. I'm not so sure anymore. I'm not. And part of it, it's not because I dislike Brandon Scherff. It's just I've just been thinking more and more about team building and where I want to spend the money and the investments that I want to make. And I shouldn't be in the business of letting good young players walk away in general, but now you're talking about, 13 missed games out of 32 over these last couple of seasons? This is sort of the norm with him, right? Where 13 games that he's out, three or four maybe where he's not quite himself, he's gotten through something. I don't know that I want to commit that kind of money to him anymore. And it's not because I dislike Brandon Scherff. He's good. You're not getting me to say anything bad about him in that way. But if we're thinking about how we build the team and how we build the roster, maybe we're not the best. Money's not best spent there on our right guard.
I've always felt money's not best spent on guards, and I can get by without them. That said, I think I would still do it at $13 million per.
Any more reservation than before, though?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Not because of his performance, but because of another injury, another season that'll end on injured reserve, number one. And number two, because I'm further away. If I was still in that 7-8 win mix and I was close to being competitive, then I'm doing everything
That's
I can to basically grab at as many things that are falling as possible as they hit the ground to keep them and hug them and say, I can't let these players leave. We're so close. Now I'm about to be bad for a couple of years probably. So re-signing a guy for $13 million in a position that's a luxury is no longer a necessity. However, while all that you can kind of file away and it means that I'm not going to be upset if anybody thinks that they should let Brandon Scherff walk, I think that's reasonable. I think he's a really, really good player that you drafted in the top five, and you need to get to a point where you're signing your own. And this is how I'm going to do that. They didn't have to re-sign Jamison Crowder. In fact, last year I was in a similar boat where I said, it's just the slot receiver. You can find a slot receiver. Anybody can get open in this offense in the slot. Why would I pay him $10 million a year? Well, because you can go an entire season without an answer in the slot until now late in December where all of a sudden we're crowning Steven Sims after two games. But you saw the drop-off, right? You've seen how damaging it was to the development of Dwayne Haskins. One fewer weapon, one guy that wasn't there for him. He finally has someone in the slot helping him out this past week, and he targeted him double-digit times, twice as many as anybody else. They probably should have just paid Jamison Crowder $10 million a year. And that's where I'm at with Brandon Scherff. Keep your own, pay your own. I'll never be upset, especially this team's not in the business of letting Pro Bowlers walk.
No, you're right.
He'll make the Pro Bowl if you sign him to a five-year contract at least three, maybe four times, assuming health. The only reason he hasn't made the Pro Bowl four straight years, by the way, is because he missed half the year last year.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not good enough to say goodbye and not pay guys that are among the best players at their position. All right, let's get to Is It Weird on Grant and Danny. It's been a little while. So I got a text from my wife. And it's one of those things where I didn't think I'd be randomly excited and or invested in this, but I'm completely invested.
Mm-hmm.
My wife doesn't seem to care about this at all, okay? She texted me and she goes, Katie Ledecky was at the St. James today. We walked out together at the same time. That's interesting to me.
That's very interesting.
She's the greatest female swimmer on the planet, okay? She is the greatest American Olympian right now in the world. She's surpassed Michael Phelps in that regard.
She's local. She's world famous. She's right. on top of her game. She's excellent.
People know about her in every country and every continent, right? So, but honestly, I wouldn't have thought I would like be moved to excitement, the idea that she walked out of the St. James with Allison today at the same time. But my first thought was, oh, well, the baby's there. I hope the baby got a picture with the greatest female athlete and female swimmer of all time. The baby was at, you know, they were like there to do their little swimming lessons or whatever, I guess. And so she goes, no, I should have gotten a picture with her and Reagan. Both have been swimmers for practically their whole lives. She didn't get a picture with her. I'm like, okay. Now, apparently there were kids getting autographs.
Yeah, if people are hounding, okay.
I said, how many kids? She said one or two. So she just walked out, and she told me what car she was driving. She parked right behind her. She got into her car. They left. By the way, I told you the kind of car. It's just a random car.
Very funny to me. I don't know why that's funny, but it's funny.
That's hilarious what kind of car she's driving. But anyways, the whole point of this story is, she said, Katie Ledecky walked out with me, and I'm like, what a missed opportunity. I'm super into the fact that she walked out of the St. James at the same time as Katie Ledecky, U.S. hero in the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
My wife doesn't seem to care at all, by the way. And also, I'm super disappointed that my baby didn't get a picture with Katie Ledecky or ask for a picture or anything.
Why else do you have a baby?
Is that weird?
Not weird at all. Why else do you have a baby if that doesn't, if it's not for that purpose when you randomly see a U.S. hero, an Olympic hero, and you can't get a picture?
You think Katie Ledecky would have looked at the president and said she wasn't taking a photo?
Of course. She gets right past Secret Service. Next thing you know, a picture gets snapped. Oh, just hold the baby real quick, Katie. One, two, three. I'm kidding. I'm not going to throw it to you.
And
just
she doesn't need to hold the baby. I need a little squat right next to the stroller, little photo op, and then we're all going about our days.
We could selfie it. I mean, there's a million ways to go about it. Of course, it's not weird at all. What's weird to me is the complete and utter lack of excitement from your lady wife.
Now, I won't say that I haven't asked her, were you excited at all? It just seems like she's over it.
That's how it's coming
but
across.
For her to text this out means that she thought it was cool. It wasn't like walking out next to just someone she'd never seen before. So I just think her level of understanding of how big a deal this was probably wasn't on the correct level, is what I would say.
Uh-huh.
Now, maybe there's some recency effect here because yesterday I was filming this big thing for NBC Sports Washington. It's going to get rolled out on TV and on digital. And I'm not allowed to give a lot of details, but I'll say that we spent a lot of time talking about Katie Ledecky and Michael Phelps at one point. And so I've done recent research and I've looked up just how unbelievable her Olympic runs have been. I think that's really, really cool. So the question is it weird? And this is actually what I want to drill down on. is it weird that if she would have told me I just walked out next to pick a Redskin, I wouldn't have cared at all?
No, it's not weird.
I walked out. Like, I've been in the St. James 10 feet from Vernon Davis before. He has trained there in the offseason or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Vernon Davis and I walked out of the St. James together. Pick your random. Josh Norman and I. No interest in that.
Yeah, like I walked out of the St. James the same time as Troy Brown Jr. Like, right. I wouldn't be excited about that. I understand. That's
but
not weird at all.
Is that weird that I was excited for Katie Ledecky?
It's not weird. I keep trying to. I drilled down on this before, and somebody asked me about this, where I remember some story anecdotally or whatever about a national that, like, you, hey, we're having this conversation at the Scherzer Showdown. They're like, wait, you were talking to Adam Eaton? Like, you were speaking words to Adam? And I'm like, yeah, it's not that crazy. We in the clubhouse, he knows us over the years. And, like, to a regular person, that's, like, so novel. When would you ever have seen Katie Ledecky? We've seen Nationals. We've seen Capitals. We've seen Redskins. You've never seen Katie Ledecky.
Let's go to Matt in Stafford on Grant and Danny. Is it weird, Matt?
And I'm
that into the idea that Katie Ledecky walked out of the St. James with my wife?
It's not weird because she seems like a local, like you're going to run into her again sometime. So there's almost like some kind of rule where if they live where you live, you kind of got to act like a cool local, like it's not a big deal.
Oh, interesting. Mm. Like a Hollywood thing where basically, you don't go up to every celebrity you see in Hollywood and, like, get a picture. They're just out for lunch.
Like, hey, Brad. Hey, Angelina. You know, like, what's going on, guys? How are you? What's up? Like, it's
you
a,
can
that's
tell
a
who
knowing
the tourists
nod.
Are.
Yeah.
I get that. You just mentioned the Nats, by the way, and Adam Eaton.
Uh-huh.
They might have a new teammate coming in the next few days, hopefully. They've been talking with Josh Donaldson.
Flirtation.
There is a rumor that they are willing to pay him $90 million over 4 years. Would you break the bank on a 4-year contract for Josh Donaldson? And how much would bringing him in change your outlook on the 2020 Nationals? Next on Grant and Danny. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Watched Elf last night, first time this December. It was on the Christmas movie hit list, and we took care of it. Elf is a dumber movie than I remember. Like, I always knew it was really, really dumb.
Sure.
It's actually dumber than I remembered. Also, it's perfect, and it's great. I think it's a timeless classic. Like, 50 years from now, people will be sitting down to watch Christmas movies, and they'll say, what about Elf with Will Ferrell? Right? Don't you think that movie will last the eternal test of Christmas time?
It's a hard question as to what makes it into the nostalgia rotations and what doesn't. You know, because for me, it's not special. I don't really care about it.
You don't like
it.
Elf?
I don't dislike it. It's never something I think about. I don't really watch it when it's on. I don't really care about it.
Let me ask it this way.
Yeah. I don't hate it, though.
But you have no Christmas spirit as well.
Well, that's
we know that about you. It's a big part of this. If you are doing a December 14th to the 24th, 10 nights of Christmas movies, where at 8 p.m. every single night, you're sitting on the couch with popcorn with your wife and your kids, and you're watching 10 straight Christmas movies from the 14th to the 24th, does Elf crack the rotation?
It might. I'd have to think about 10. But that's probably where it is for me. It's like maybe just outside looking in, maybe 1 year it could be in the 10.
Okay.
But it's just to me, it's just not special. And again, I don't dislike it. I don't hate it. Like it's I'd rather watch that than like Miracle on Black and White Street or, you know, something that was made in the 30s. You know what I mean? But there's others that I feel like are more apt and more entertaining for me.
It's one of those movies that makes me laugh out loud. The 10th time, the 20th time, the 30th time you watch
still
it, maybe
qualifies.
More than the first. But again, I need to admit that it is really, really dumb. And I didn't even remember some of the parts
But it's like it's Will Ferrell.
That's the point of it.
Doing like juvenile shtick. So yeah.
Exactly.
You're not there to see Sophie's Choice.
I just tweeted out a screen grab via the snipping tool, which Dar taught me how to use on a computer, which is nice, of the Nationals depth chart. The outfield as of right now, Juan Soto in left, Victor Robles in center, Adam Eaton in right, with Michael Taylor backing those guys up, and Andrew Stevenson, who scored a critical run in the wild card win against the Brewers as a pinch runner. You're pretty set in the outfield. If that's your group of five going into the year, you got no issues, nothing to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
The catching position is on lock because the Nats brought back Yan Gomes. Kurt Suzuki and Gomes will split time again this year. You've got age behind the plate, but they got age all over the place. That hasn't really been a big concern for Washington as they've built this roster. They need to work on the bullpen. It looks like they are done in their rotation after re-signing Strasburg. His press conference was yesterday. If you missed him on the show, he was outstanding. There are a few write-ups on it at thefandc.com with the audio linked. You can check out the stories to what he said there. But if you're a Nats fan, you should do that because he was very complimentary to you guys and wanting to continue in some ways serve DC fans after that World Series. And you can go to thefandc.com and find our podcast from yesterday. But Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin, 1-3, Sanchez, 4, and then a competition for the fifth spot between Joe Ross, Austin Voth, and Eric Fetty is going to kick off in spring training, and maybe one or two of the losers will end up as longer guys in the bullpen. But I bring this up, Danny, to say that I didn't mention the infield yet. The infield is not set. The infield is a problem right now. As of this moment, Howie Kendrick is penciled in at first base. Presumably you'll re-sign Ryan Zimmerman. I still think you need to have a left-handed bat there to spell those guys from time to time against tough righties. So you might need to make two additions there. At second base, as of this moment, Carter Kieboom and Howie Kendrick are your guys. Is Kieboom even going to be in the big leagues on opening day? We don't know that.
Mike Rizzo spoke about him maybe having a chance to make the roster at some point. That doesn't sound like, hey, we're all set there.
The only position where you are set in your infield is Trey Turner. And then at third base, you have no starter. Jake Knoll, as of right now, is the guy written down on MLB.com's depth chart. That's not going to happen. That shouldn't happen. If you're trying to make the playoffs, if you want to win a World Series, no disrespect to Jake Knoll, that's just not going to work. So you need a third baseman desperately, and you need help on the right side of your infield. But there is at least still talk that the third baseman could be coming because Bob Nightingale reported on Monday night that the Nats are still very serious on Josh Donaldson. They have at least been willing in negotiations, according to Nightingale, to go upwards of 4 years, $90 million. I don't know if that gets it done.
I don't know if it gets it done.
It's got to be close. And I told you this for a few months now. I don't like going 4 years with Josh Donaldson, who just turned 34 years old. I don't like doing that at all. You may have to, though.
I think you have to. It's the cost of keeping the window open, right? Now, you might reasonably miss out on him, okay? That's entirely possible. That's where I got to start thinking outside the box, right? How can I upgrade? How can I get myself? You're not going to replace Anthony Rendon by one player. It's not going to be a one for one. But the same way when you lost Bryce Harper, you made up for it by A, reducing the amount of runs you gave up with Patrick Corbin, increasing the amount of runs that maybe you would have scored otherwise with an improvement from Juan Soto, Adam Eaton playing every day, a better year from Anthony Rendon. We know how the math works. You don't have a one for one replacement. That's why I start kicking around some interesting ideas, right? Guys like Nicholas Castellanos, right, who's an outfielder at this point, and then I move Juan Soto to first base. Or Marcelo Zuna, who could play left field, move Juan Soto to first. Howie Kendrick, I major in having him play second most days. Something like that you got to start doing. If you can't get Donaldson or don't want to go enough years for Donaldson, you've got to find a way to replace offense, in my opinion.
This wouldn't do that, I guess, but why not get creative and make a trade for a second-tier third baseman, you know, like a Hunter Dozier? The day you were out, I went through a bunch of names.
I heard it was really good.
Miguel Andujar among them. I mean, why not
expendable
make a
pieces,
swap
right?
for a guy like that and go get, you know, a guy who's on a team right now where maybe they're either the everyday starter on a bad team or an extra piece where there is a plethora of infielders and fill it that way. And that way you don't have to spend huge in your outfield. Here's my concern. I do think they can sign Donaldson, and I certainly hope that's the case. However, I have a feeling, and I hope I'm proved wrong here, I got a feeling like he wants to be a Brave, and this is similarly to Steven Strasburg, who went and talked to the Padres, and he went and talked to the Dodgers, and he took a call from the Yankees. All along, he was coming back to the Nationals, and whatever they first offered him, he said, I like that, but let's get a little more money out of Washington. Let's make it seem like I'm more interested in leaving than I am. I could see Donaldson doing that right now, where the Braves said, we'll give you 4 years and $85 million, and he wants 4 and 100. So now he's got 4 and 90 from the Nats, and ultimately the Braves give him 4 and 100 or whatever it is.
Right.
But, like, this is a leverage play. I hope I'm wrong, but that's kind of the gist I get. If they get Donaldson, you went from having maybe the best third baseman in the sport to having a pretty good one offensively who can make some plays on D. The big part I think that we have to talk about as well is the back end of a four-year contract for him is going to be a little bit of a mess, but is it worth it to have two more bites at the apple? It seems to me like their plan as of right now is do everything you can to try to give yourself two more years in this window. Mm-hmm. You've still got Max. You've still got Strauss. You've got Anibal Sanchez. Even though this is an aging team with Howie Kendrick, let's keep the band together as best we can for another 92, 93 wins, get into the playoffs, and try to go on another crazy run this year or next. But what do you guys think? Would you pay Donaldson $100 million if that's what it takes over 4 years to come here? Would you go that expensive at third base for a guy who might not be able to make all 4 years of that contract look good? Or would you try to get a little bit more creative? Right now, the infield is a problem. 800-636-1067. You can tweet us as well.
At Funny Danny for me and at Grant H. Paulson for GP.
Good thing is, 64 days until pitchers and catchers report.
That's it.
You don't form the roster on December 18th, but you'd better get going or you might be in a little trouble at third base. The Nats have been flirting with Josh Donaldson. Bob Nightingale of USA Today Sports and one of our Radio.com Sports MLB insiders says that they're willing to give him $90 million over 4 years. I don't know if that'll get it done or not. I know that that's a lot of money and a pretty long contract for a 34-year-old third baseman who last year, if you remember, had to sign a one-year contract because teams were a little curious.
Yeah, prove it deal, and he proved it.
He wasn't completely healthy. He was coming off a down season with two teams in 2018 where he hit .245 with just eight homers and 23 batted in 52 games. But last year he played in all but seven games. He hit almost 40 bombs, 37 jacks. And in fact, if you take 2018 out of the equation when he was hurt, his home run totals last year, 37. 2017, 33. 2016, 37. 2015, 41. And he led the league with 123 RBI and 122 runs. He won the MVP that year. But basically, since 2015, he's consistently been right around 35 to 37 home runs.
He walks a lot, sees a lot of pitches. It gives you a pretty good at bat. Again, he is not Anthony Rendon, but he ain't bad. I mean, he was the thorn in the Nats' side last year.
And let's be honest, by the way, there is no Anthony Rendon out there.
Right. They don't just make those guys. So he's going to strike out a bunch, and that's kind of the knock sometimes. But I'm telling you, that is a good hitter. That he would slide right into the four spot for me. Soto would hit third.
One of my biggest concerns right now with the 2020 Nationals, as far as who is on the roster, mm-hmm. not the positions they don't have, is a regression from Juan Soto, which you will be bringing on if you don't protect him in some way. It's just natural for a young sure. hitter who is not seeing pitches to hit.
Well, look at him at the beginning of the season.
Right.
Not that he was bad, but it was you were watching it. You're watching him expand the zone, try to yank everything, and he was swinging and missing. A lot of bad
during
contact.
Injuries, right? Where
yeah.
you didn't have Turner, where you didn't have Rendon, where you didn't have some of the support for him in that lineup. If there's someone hitting behind or in front of, potentially, Juan Soto, in the case of Rendon, we saw it last year with Howie Kendrick hitting fifth, we kind of sandwiched him with pro bats who are going to kill fastballs.
It's a presence. The presence matters, right?
You need to help him because if he steps back in a year in which you don't have Rendon already, your offense takes a big, big regression. And I think bringing in Donaldson could cure that a little bit. Could make sure if you're saying, and I like that, you bat Juan Soto third, so you go Turner one, Eaton two, Soto three, Donaldson four, Kendrick, let's say, five.
Uh-huh.
That's a really good top five. And all of a sudden, you don't have to worry a whole lot about Juan Soto not getting anything to hit. Cullen's in D.C. on the Fan. How are you?
Not too bad. You're stealing my thunder. My call was, I don't love Donaldson, but if you don't get some protection on either side of him, Soto's never going to see a fastball again. And I wanted to leave you with my hot take on NL MVP for next year. Trey Turner. I'll take your comments off the air.
That would require a fully healthy season and some of the hot stretches that he's seen for a more sustained amount of time.
Right.
Right? But it's not the craziest thing I've ever heard. It's tough to imagine a league that's still got Christian Yelich and Bellinger and some of these other superstars that he could do it. But if the argument is he might have a breakout, huge, massive, all-star, graduate to maybe star status season, yeah.
If you take his home run rate from last year, though, and you extrapolate it out over 158 games.
About 30 homers, right?
So 30-plus home run season
yeah.
for a guy that, if he played that much, would probably steal 70 bags. you know, 65 bases potentially.
That's not nothing.
So if you do that while hitting 300 like you did last season, you're going to be an MVP candidate. So I love that call. I mean, I've always kind of thought that was the upside for him. So far, he has settled below what I was projecting. And if this is who he is, you just have an excellent baseball player.
Right.
You have a guy that, you know, Ryan Zimmerman once told us we have to re-sign. He makes the whole thing go, basically. You know, and I think that that's probably a key for them, is that they keep him around this organization, particularly now that you've seen the departures of Bryce Harper last year and Anthony Rendon this year. And at some point, Juan Soto's leaving too. Turner is not a Boris guy.
CAA.
To me, you got to make sure you keep those guys that aren't the Boris guys, because the other ones might all be walking, it seems like. And that means Victor Robles and Trey Turner as a potential core. A Robles this year is interesting, too, because last year was his first opportunity in the major leagues, had a coming out party of sorts. There is more power there that he'll continue to tap into. I'm hoping for more consistency in his at-bats, more contact, fewer strikeouts. Can he take a batting average, you know, that hovered around the 260s at times and get it up into the 285 range? Can he get on base, you know, at a 375, 380 clip for you and turn himself into a two-type hitter when Adam Eaton moves on in a year or so? But to me, that's a huge storyline for this team's next wave. But they need to find a third baseman. And if it's not Josh Donaldson, who is it, is the big question. Let's say they miss out on Donaldson. Let's say we get news tomorrow morning that he's signing with the Atlanta Braves. Are you going the route of the outfielder and pushing someone to the infield? Because it still doesn't fix third.
It doesn't totally fix third. So I've got to go cheap somewhere, and I've got to go big somewhere. Just looking at the Nats' budget and how the thing is structured, right? I love your idea of exploring the trade market. Now, I just keep saying, I feel like they're so thin in terms of high-end prospects. And it may not take a high-end prospect to go get one of these guys that you're talking about, but I just feel like they could be out big,
but they got
just given
three.
Their system.
Three's enough to get you one. It's just that you don't have much left over. But between Luis Garcia, Carter Kieboom,
and Jackson Rutledge,
you can get pretty much any third baseman you want.
But the point I'm making is I'd rather not just keep raiding the cupboard. At some point, you need to replenish some of your own coffers, especially when it comes to pitching, by the way. Again, they haven't graduated a pitcher that's helped them in a sustained way in the major league level since Steven Strasburg. And that's one of the big issues right now with this organization. They've had position guys come up and thrive. We know that. We've gone through this here a couple different times as guys have gone on to different organizations, or we're talking Soto now. But I'd like to be able to keep as many of those guys as I can for a little while, knowing that the end of this amazing window with these high 30-year-olds is coming to a close pretty soon. So I would probably go after Ozuna, go after a Castellanos, and see if you could get him, not on the cheap, but something affordable. Move Soto to first, maybe solve that way. Then you could throw in Asdrubal Cabrera a year deal or a two-year deal to have him play third and be worse there, but at least you can be serviceable, right? I like your trade idea, though. I do.
That's kind of my answer. If not Donaldson, then I'm trading for a starting third baseman, and I'm just taking a big step back at that position. But then I'm throwing some money at my bullpen, and I'm making that a strength, and I'm winning a bunch of 2-1 games.
Yeah.
Then I'm signing two or three relievers to go with Doolittle and Rainey and Suero, and I am upgrading my pitching staff as best as possible.
Maybe
and,
second base is an area you could try.
Yeah, well, I'm 100% signing a second baseman if I don't get a third baseman. No, you can either make a trade for a guy. That's much easier to do because there are more decent second basemen than there are third basemen. Or you could just sign a player because there's a market there that is a little bit better than the third base market.
Mm-hmm.
Craig Hoffman's our Redskins beat reporter. He'll join us next at 11:18. Drew Brees on Monday Night Football broke the all-time record for passing touchdowns in the regular season. Also went 29 of 30 passing, which nobody had ever seen before. Where does he rank among the greatest quarterbacks you've watched in your life? We'll put together that ranking on G&D next hour right here on The Fan.
Tedbert Fort is built for the holidays. The Built for the Holidays sales event is happening right meow at Tedbert Ford in Fairfax and Chantilly with an estimated savings of 20% on select Ford models. Pretty much every model on the lot. You go see them, you don't pay them anything for 60 days. That's pretty cool. You know why? Why? Because they were founded in 1959. 60 years of doing business for folks in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, right? So, to celebrate that, they're making you not pay them anything for 60 days. That's pretty cool, right? So then, when you do pay them, you pay them a lot less than you probably should, to be honest with you. How about some of these deals? $9,800 below MSRP on a 2020 Ford Explorer. $10,800 off the MSRP on a 2019 Ford. Ford Ranger. How about $14,900 off a new 2019 Ford F-250 SD? And again, all those I mentioned, no payments for 60 days. Awesome deal. You got to go see my guys at Denver Ford. As I mentioned, search that. Get them. Click away to Denver Ford.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.